wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Fear not, we will be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen and Blue Apron. They bring the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who, it seems like every week, has to join me in sending our condolences for some place in the world, and now that place is a little closer to home, right, Christian Spicer? Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everybody. Yes, another senseless act of violence and horrible wildfires. If you're listening to this on an Apple device, you can donate via the App Store to help the wildfire recovery and help people in need. It's an easy way to do that. I'm sure you can find other ways as well. And also, on a little more positive note, thank you to everybody that voted. Regardless of how you voted, everybody that got up, got out, especially on the East Coast where the weather was bad, stood in line and cast your ballot. Thank you for making your voice heard.
Indeed, we got so many emails of people who said it was their first time voting, or that they were voting after a long lapse in voting. I asked people to send emails to that regard and was so delighted to see that. It heartens me, and also heartens me that biggest turnout for a midterm since 1966. That's pretty awesome. So thanks everybody who did that. But yeah, it's been a rough week. I have to admit, I'm usually really excited to do this show. I am still excited this week, tempered slightly by the fact that I'm literally been sitting around wondering if I'm going to be evacuated from my home. It's about 2 to 3 miles away that the fire is raging in the San Fernando Valley where I live. And we are inundated with smoke. I'm concerned about my children's health. And I wonder if the fires in this swirling wind that we've got over the next 3 days will reach my doorstep as it has reached so many of the people that I know and care about. I know many friends and family members that have been evacuated. Some have actually lost their homes. It's a scary time here in California, but we get to talk about video games. So I'm excited to get my mind off it for a little while. But I appreciate everybody that's sent kind wishes on Twitter. It's a crazy time. But I'm really doubly excited because we have an awesome guest, one that I've been wanting to have on the show for a while now. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for Designer Living in Canada, because we have narrative designer at Co-op, journalist at Kotaku, and streamer at Caffeine, as well as a resident of Montreal. Kate Gray is joining us for the first time. Hey, Kate.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to know that Canada is spelt with a K, like Kate. Yes.
Well, Kotaku, Canada, you know, it's the hard K sound. That's all we care about here.
Yeah. It's all good.
Let's get into the show. We got lots of stuff. There's a ton of news, including Microsoft's big XO18 event that happened just yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Also, where you can chat about the show, meet like-minded folks, have a good time. I recommend it. It's a cool group of people. Kate, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I am actually quite excited about the Microsoft thing, because is that the one that's happening in Mexico?
It is. Yes, yeah. Mexico City. And they had quite a number of announcements at XO18, most notably one not one that Christian predicted, but we will get to that. So let's run down some of the things that they mentioned that were big news. We got a release date for Crackdown 3. The original Crackdown is free in the Microsoft Store until November 30th. A bunch of Xbox Game Pass news, including a whole bunch of new games that are coming to it. But I think the biggest news is that Microsoft Studios has acquired a couple of new developers into their stable, ones that have pretty large fan bases and pretty cool games to their credit. Obsidian and In Exile, both developers that specialize in single-player narrative role-playing games. We can get into that. And also, I would say another of the big news is that the Xbox One will support mouse and keyboard for the first time officially in 14 titles, including Fortnite. So you can play mouse and keyboard on Xbox One in Fortnite. Kate, among all of that news coming out of the event, what would you consider to be your most exciting, most favorite?
You know, I didn't think I was going to be excited about Crackdown. It's not usually the game I'd like to play, but I played it maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, I think at E3, and I don't know, it's sort of stuck in my heart a little bit, and so I've been keeping an eye out for when it actually comes out, and it looks like that's soon.
Yeah, February 15th is the official release date. I guess I don't think we really needed another February release. There's a lot of big ones, but okay, bring it on. Crackdown 3 finally coming out. Of course, if you've been listening to this show, you know that we've talked a lot about Crackdown 3 over the years. A big Microsoft first-party game that was highly anticipated by me, among lots of other people, but it has faced numerous delays and kind of underwhelming showings at various conventions and press events over the years, in my opinion. But boy, what they showed for Crackdown 3 this weekend, I think delivers on the promise that it originally was announced with when they were talking about the Xbox One being an always-on console and the games powered by the cloud. You know, lots of big promises there. They showed a new multiplayer mode that will be – it's called Wrecking Zone. It will be part of Crackdown 3 when it releases. That actually is – what seems to be this vision of what the whole game was going to be, and that is massively destructive environments. It's a, I think, 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 mode where you're playing teams and you're just, you know, it's sort of a crazy deathmatch in these crazy vertical environments, but everything is destructible, and they leverage the power of the cloud to calculate all the physics for all these insane bits and pieces of buildings and bridges and roads, all being destroyed in real time as you blast at your opponents. I'm excited about Crackdown 3 in a way that I haven't been up to this point, but I'm also sad that it seems like this was what the single player was going to be as well, and it's not going to be in part of the single player mode. So Kate, tell me about, do you think that this mode is going to catch on? Do you think it's going to light a fire and kind of, propel Crackdown 3 to more success than it may have would have, you know, otherwise enjoyed?
I was actually surprised when I did first play it at this sort of fan base, I guess. I don't know much about Crackdown other than there's lots of explosions. And it seems like they're leaning into that part of it. And, you know, people were into that 3-4 years ago. So we'll see. I'm not sure. I don't want to make a proclamation in case I'm wrong, but people seem to love explosions.
Yeah. Well, we've never let being wrong stop us, right, Christian? Because you were wrong about a number of things about this event, which we'll get to. But let me get your take on Crackdown 3, because finally coming out, it seems like it's got some excitement behind it. The wow factor is I think, something that you and I both have been looking for from this game as a potential system seller, and finally I think it's got a wow factor. Did you get a chance to see video of the — I know you've been on vacation this weekend, so maybe you didn't get a chance to see it, but it's pretty wow inducing for me.
Yeah, no, I think it had a really great showing, and it's refreshing to see Crackdown have that showing again, because it's been on again, off again, on again, off. Like the first time they showed it, it was very impressive, and then first hands-on, I think, was fun. And then was it last year's E3 felt a little less fun, and leaning into, was it Terry Crews is like, this is my vehicle or whatever. You know, I was like, oh, okay. But this looks really cool. And I think what it is becoming more of, and a lot of Microsoft, this kind of ties into the other things they announced at in Mexico City. It is... It doesn't need to be a system seller anymore, right? It just needs to be a marquee title on Game Pass. And so it keeps people like me subscribing to Game Pass, and it might be the thing that pushes someone else over the edge to try Game Pass. And so when they have these big known titles being added alongside things like Grip, which I talked about a little bit last week, which was day one on Game Pass, and then some of these other smaller games that they've announced that are coming out, it makes the service have that perception of value, the same way Netflix adding, you know, big name actors early on to its original programming did, of like, okay, this is where I'm going to get these indie movies and quirky things or whatever, but I'm also going to get these big name actors and these big name directors doing this thing. And I think this presentation that Crackdown 3 had at Mexico City makes it that. Like, if they put the gameplay video that they released this weekend in a trailer, you know, during football or something like that, or basketball, and it's like, game, play it now on Game Pass. That's pretty compelling to just be like, click, click, play. I think it makes a really great commercial, which is what it needs to be, you know, as much as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that Crackdown 3 is the House of Cards of video games?
I mean, I tried not to reference Kevin Spacey just because he's fair become enough. A little more talk. I hopefully that Crackdown 3 doesn't have problems 5 seasons in, but yes, he is a marquee title. It is a marquee title.
Yeah. Clearly Microsoft is all in on Game Pass. I mean, they talked about Game Pass over and over and over. Games are now, in the same way you used to see the Xbox logo before trailers, now you're seeing the Game Pass logo, little stinger before games in their trailers, which I think is smart marketing on Microsoft's part. It is, I think, creating value in the mind of gamers. And they announced 16 new games for Game Pass, including PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Void Bastards, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, Mutant Year Zero, a bunch of games here. Thomas Was Alone, Agents of Mayhem. So they're continuing to add more and more games to this service. Kate, what do you think about Game Pass? Do you think it has the potential to force the hand of people like Sony to add more value to their subscription services? Do you think this is a sort of an arms race that benefits the consumer?
I think the one thing I'm most excited for when it comes to the Xbox Game Pass is that it gets visibility for indies, which is really difficult on consoles. You know, you've got games like Thomas Was Alone, Pathologic 2, which is an interesting one. And I think Hellblade? I don't know. Indie is becoming a really difficult label. But, you know, these smaller games that people don't play as much as the AAA stuff because, I mean, you've probably seen in the internet comment sections of the world, people think that indie games are bad because they don't have, you know, billion-dollar budgets or whatever. So I think this is a good way to get value, to get those games that deserve to be seen out there, and to get people to appreciate that indie games are not bad.
Well, they're also going to do a – they announced that they're going to do a Winter of Arcade, like they used to do Summer of Arcade. They didn't say what games will be a part of that, but Microsoft traditionally has been really good about highlighting indie developers and making that into an event. And I'm hoping that whatever Winter of Arcade turns out to be, that they actually, you know, really double down on what you're saying, which is highlighting great indie developers and great indie games. Let's talk a little bit about the developers that they announced having acquired. I think that was some very, very big news. Obsidian and InXile are actually two of my favorite developers because they make the kinds of games that I love. In particular, isometric PC-based narrative single-player role-playing games, which doesn't seem particularly compatible with the Xbox One platform, but I don't see why not. And it's also interesting that both Obsidian and InXile lately have resorted to crowdfunding to start projects that they've worked on. In Exile with Bard's Tale 4, which I really love, and some of their VR stuff, which also kind of makes me sad if In Exile stops working in VR because Microsoft doesn't have a VR platform. I'll be very, very sad because Mage's Tale is, I think, one of the best games on Oculus. Obsidian, of course, has a great pedigree working on big, big games like Dungeon Siege and Fallout New Vegas and Neverwinter Nights and even Star Wars The Old Republic. Lately, they've done things like the Pillars of Eternity series. What do you expect to see from these developers now that they are part of the Microsoft first-party stable, Kate?
You know, I would be really interested in seeing Xbox's plan just to like sneak into their office. Maybe that's because I've been playing too much Assassin's Creed and just look at why they
don't assassinate anybody, please.
Well, no, I won't. I'll just steal all their treasure.
There you go.
I want to know why they're acquiring all these studios, you know? It seemed like they owned Rare for a long time and weren't doing anything with them. And it's like someone's gone, oh my God, why don't we make games? And it's like, yeah, why don't you? Like,
yeah.
I loved Viva Pinata. They should just crank out Viva Pinata sequels forever.
I'm not exactly sure that was always ever a sales bonanza, though. I'm not sure that people were. But I liked Viva Pinata as well. I'm not sure it did the numbers that they're looking for.
Maybe not, but it is a cult favorite. But one of the studios I really liked and was excited to see more of was Press Play, which I think is a Danish studio that Microsoft owned. They released a game called Kalimba, which is one of my only 10 out of 10 games. And then they shut the studio down on the same day they shut down Lionhead. And I just don't want Microsoft to go shutting down a bunch of amazing studios, you know? That's what I'm afraid of.
Well, it's a justifiable fear if past is precedent, right? But yeah. Certainly it seems like they recognize that how Sony was eating their lunch this generation is the fact that they had so many high-profile premiere first-party exclusives. I think Microsoft recognized that they had a giant hole in their library that way. So I think these are two excellent pickups for them if you're looking for really high-quality developers that can give you that AAA incredible experience. And certainly with the added resources that Microsoft brings to the table, and you don't have to have In Exile, you know, doing Kickstarters or GoFundMes anymore for their, you know, for their games like Wasteland 3. Makes me curious, Wasteland 3 is still not out. Is that going to be, I wonder if that's been carved out and they'll make that game and then whatever Microsoft wants will come after that, because that clearly is a PC title. Although, you know, Microsoft does Windows, so maybe they want PC titles. Christian, what's your take on these two acquisitions?
Yeah, I wonder if part of the keyboard mouse support is for these two acquisitions. And while certainly shooter fans have been clamoring for it, I personally enjoy not having keyboard mouse on console because I'm not as skilled with them.
Levels the playing field for you a bit? Yeah.
A little bit. I'm curious now how these games, and I think it would be case by case, you know, how they match make based on keyboard, mouse, or controller. But, you know, there were rumors, and I think they talked a little bit about it. I only scrubbed through it with, like, the 90-minute presentation. But, like, Game Pass coming to PC, and certainly the Microsoft games are already, you know, Forza and Sea of Thieves. And so if you have these two developers that have a great track record making PC games, certainly I think they would need to be able to be playable with a controller. But it kind of helps with that argument of, oh, well, you can't play it for real on console. If it's like, yes, you can. We have controller support, but also plug in a keyboard and mouse. You know, like play the game however you want to play it. And then I'm curious.
Well, it's worth noting, though, that it is a game-by-game support. So your game has to accept the support of the keyboard and mouse. It doesn't just work with everything. I think that's, you know, important to note.
Yes, correct. But I feel like for these two developers, it would make sense. I could see them wanting that support in their game, or Microsoft kind of pushing for it. But I think the thing that struck me the most about the announcement is whether, like, you know, we want them to remain independent, right? Like, they even talked about how there was a track record of an Exile and Obsidian kind of working together before. And it's like, no, we're not going to try to force them to be one studio for us. We want to keep all of these studios independent and working on different projects. And, you know, we'll see. They're saying the right things right now, but I think Kate makes great points where it's Microsoft has kind of gone through this feast and famine approach with first party development and studios where they bring a bunch in and then they shut a bunch down and now they're bringing a bunch in and hopefully it leads to something productive because they certainly have a stable of talent now that I'm curious when these games start coming out, but they seem well poised for, if not 5 years in the future, you know, hopefully sooner, but at least then.
Well, I think it certainly points to Microsoft seeding this generation and going all in on the next, right? We see a lot of maneuvering on whatever Project Scarlet is going to be. And then you have all these acquisitions, and you're right. We're not going to see games from these companies or these developers in the short term. This is like 2-3 years away minimum on some of this stuff and probably longer. So maybe what you'll see is just a really amazing lineup of games with whatever the next Xbox console is called in its early months and year.
What do you mean? They announced the next Xbox console at this conference, Jeff. They talked about it. They detailed it for 30 minutes. I was right. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. So, yeah, Christian, you thought that they would. Clearly, they did not. I just want to gloat for just a moment about that.
Hey, what's that saying? Even an accurate clock is wrong. Twice.
I don't think that's how that goes, but you know,
even a perfectly Greenwich time digital clock is wrong twice a day. I think Greenwich. I don't know.
Greenwich.
Whatever.
Yeah. Even a pronunciation of Greenwich is wrong.
Yeah, at least twice a day from a professor in linguistics. Yeah, something like that.
Couple of other things I want to note from the event. One of my favorite games for for Xbox 360. Is Civilization Revolution. It is, I think, the perfect form of Civilization if you're intimidated by Civilization. It is one of the very few Xbox games that I have a perfect gamer score on because I did everything in it.
Increasingly scared of Civilization. Is this the one for me then?
Yeah, this is. Well, modern, yeah, if you're actual Civilization. Civ Rev is an excellent game, and it is coming to Xbox One in an enhanced form. I'm excited about that. Also, major Final Fantasies, all the Final Fantasies, well, not all of them. There's a lot of Final Fantasies, but many of them are coming backwards compatible to Xbox One. There will be, starting next week, 13 and 13.2 and Lightning Returns for Xbox 360 will be backwards compatible. Final Fantasy 7, 9, 10, X2, or 10.2, and 12 are also all coming to Xbox One sometime in 2019. So we saw Sony talk about that Nintendo talked about it, right? Nintendo talked about it. And now Microsoft is doing it as well. So, Kate, are you a Final Fantasy fan?
Oh, no. This is going to get me, like, a lot of angry comments. But Final Fantasy is one of the biggest gaps in my video game knowledge. I am just not a JRPG person. But I started 9 recently. Mm. And I want to love it because my housemate loves it so much. So much. So much. And I'd like to be able to bond with my housemate over a shared love of this one very specific game, but it's
some of those are you have to have been there, you know.
I know.
Some of them, it's just like at the time it meant a lot. Like yeah. 7, I think people play 7 now. It's like, well, what is everybody so excited about? Well, because nothing was doing this then. Everything does it now, but you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up Nintendo, so I have a lot of gaps in my knowledge about PlayStation and Xbox games. I've caught up on a lot, but yeah, Final Fantasy, it's tough to get into it now because it's like I'm playing The Witcher on the one hand and then I'm like, right. Oh, everyone's made of like three triangles. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit, it's much more difficult to step back in time sometimes with certain things for sure. But anyway, I thought it was a pretty interesting event from Microsoft's perspective. I mean, it wasn't E3 level, but I thought they had some great stuff. And I think I'm right there with you, Kate, on Crackdown 3 being the biggest takeaway. It really now feels like a much more something Microsoft can hang their hat on and be a reason to have an Xbox and a reason to have quite frankly, Game Pass. I mean, Game Pass is really a compelling product in so many ways. And they recognize that, and I think they're emphasizing and underlining that in every way they can. Christian, what is your story of the week?
I do think the Microsoft stuff was the biggest stuff, but also from this, I think it was first on Reset Era is kind of how it started getting the word out, but Nintendo Japan posted job listings on their official site, advertising spots on the Legend of Zelda team in Kyoto. And so, of course, all the flags went up of when I was reading about this, it seemed like there were two camps that came up. One was, oh, yeah, they're hiring another Zelda incoming. And the other one was, wait, they're just now hiring for the next Zelda? Oh, it's going to be 10 years. And it was like this excitement of like, yeah, Zelda. And then like, oh, so far away, Zelda.
But yeah,
one it's is like- for topography. Dungeons, level concept design, and then the other one is a broad, this, I think this is the scarier one, a broad level designer responsible for more generalized game content, such as enemies, world design, dungeon design planning, which to me is like Zelda 2027, right?
Yeah. Like, how do we make a game? We need someone to make a game, please. Can you make a game flip for us? But it is obvious, right? We knew a new Zelda would happen. It's exciting that it seems like there's some progress there, at least, you know, they're hiring up for it. They're revving that team back up. That's exciting. It's been, what, 2 years since Breath of the Wild came out? So about time to get a cranking on the next one, please. My question, the thing this brings up for me, and I would love to hear you both of your takes on that, is what do we want the next Zelda to be? Because Breath of the Wild, of course, changed the formula so drastically. Do you do that again? Kate, I'm curious. Do you want a Breath of the Wild style experience in a new land with new shrines and new kinds of things? Is that the new template for Zelda? Or do they go back to the more traditional dungeons and acquiring things in a linear way, Zeldas? Or option C, do they try something equally as radical and take Zelda in an entirely new direction yet again? What would be your preference if you had the magic power to decide?
This is assuming I'm not the one they're going to hire.
I hope you are. I didn't even think of that.
No, exclusive. I can't do any of those things.
Exclusive.
No.
We just got a scoop.
I don't even speak Japanese. I think that would be a major roadblock. Well, okay. So my favorite Zelda, slightly unconventional choice is Majora's Mask. I think the best Zeldas are the ones with really, really interesting narratives. And I loved Breath of the Wild. But narrative wasn't that strong, really, because it was more about the exploration and the climbing and the seeing something and running to it. And it was nonlinear. And I'm happy with the nonlinear aspect, less happy with the sort of light on narrative aspect. And I would like to see them maybe not change things up entirely because, I mean, they need a nap probably, but manage to combine the thing that was great about old Zeldas with what's great about Breath of the Wild somehow. I mean, that's a big task, isn't it?
Well, no, I mean, we have this is the magic power question. So I love it. I would suggest just if anybody's listening, don't be critical of Breath of the Wild's narrative, at least in a tweet, because people don't take kindly to that. I had a tweet that went viral because I was critical of Zelda's narrative. Yeah,
I don't think that was the only reason why that tweet took
off. It was a big part of it. Anyway, I think that's an excellent suggestion. I'm more inclined to want it to go back to old Zelda, but I know that's very unpopular of me. I think it would be much more difficult for them to sort of recapture what made Breath of the Wild such a breath of fresh air. I think doing that again might not feel as amazing as the first time, but what do I know? They seem to have the ability to conjure magic themselves. Christian, what's your take on what you would like from the next Zelda?
So I'm of two minds. One is give me more of the same, and that would be playing to Kate's, I think, favorite of Majora's Mask, right? That was more of the same of Ocarina of Time. They took an established template, were able to play with it, add a dark narrative to it, and do things that subverted expectations because they were built on the immediate game prior to that. And I think that's really cool. I think another example of Nintendo doing a great job with that is Mario Galaxy 2, where the first Galaxy was incredible, and then the second one is the definitive version of that, in my opinion. I think people hold the first Galaxy in higher regard because it was the first one that kind of blew people away with these spherical worlds. But I think the second one is the refined, polished, more creative version of that. So I think doing something like that with Breath of the Wild would be really interesting and fascinating to see what it could do. It wouldn't feel as revolutionary, but I think it would become the perfected version of that. Then the other thing, if they didn't do that, an approach I think would be interesting would be if they could apply, it needs to be bigger, but apply what I would call the Mario Odyssey approach to it, where it's like a Zelda that has a whole bunch of worlds that pay homage to all of the other Zeldas in ways that Odyssey was able to do. So like, I mean, this game could be massive, but if there's like a Breath of the Wild land and a Link Between Worlds land and an Ocarina of Time land, and you're kind of warping in and out of these things that are self-contained and rich and interesting, and not just dungeons, like they all have little overworlds and then maybe a couple of dungeons and you're bouncing between those. I think it could be really fascinating to do something that, you know, pays tribute to all of the great Zelda games that have come before and do it in an interesting and fresh way, the way I think Odyssey did for Mario. And really, both of those ideas seem easy to do. So, you know, Nintendo, pick one, right?
Well, I think one thing we can be certain of is that whatever is the next Zelda, it will arrive just in time for the Switch to be replaced. And it'll live in this weird limbo between the Switch and the next console, and then it'll come out on the next one like a week before it comes out on Switch, and it'll be awkward for everybody to purchase. And that's what Zeldas are for now, evidently. My story of the week, again, Xbox stuff is pretty big, but I was intrigued by this story that happened relatively early in the week that feels like the suits at Activision Blizzard kind of throwing the team at Bungie under the bus a bit. And in their investor call that happened this week, Activision Blizzard reported their third quarter fiscal results for 2018 and talked about how great Call of Duty Black Ops 4 is doing. It's outperforming Black Ops 3 and a lot of the previous Call of Duties. It's really, I think, proving to them, why spend money on a single player? We don't need to do that. But also, more importantly than that, they said that Destiny 2 Forsaken has underperformed, and they are looking for ways to, quote, re-engage the core fan base and also potentially find other methods of monetization, quote, new opportunities for monetization, which is, I think, a little scary thing for any fans of video games to hear. Luke Smith came out with a tweet in response this week saying that their goal is to create a game that excites fans and that the folks at Bungie want to play, and that's what they're going to continue to do. But boy, it feels like a swipe at that team. Kate, what is your response or reaction to this?
I almost wonder if the fact that it's like not doing as well as they expected was because Destiny was such a huge hit, and I think a lot of AAA studios are looking at Fortnite and being like, I want that. And I don't know. Maybe this is bad of me to say, but Activision Blizzard has a lot of money. I think they'll be okay.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. It's interesting because if you look at the sort of reactionary layer of the community, they seem to have never been happier about Destiny 2 than with this Forsaken expansion. They seem to have very positive things to say about it. And yet, it maybe isn't doing the numbers that Activision Blizzard would want. Certainly, it's a much more competitive landscape for that kind of game than ever before. More games are doing what Destiny 2 does than, you know, this perpetual loop of grinder shooters. I mean, even putting out Call of Duty Black Ops 4, I think, eats the lunch of your own game in a lot of ways. I would imagine a lot of that player base is the same, has a lot of overlap between those two games. Christian, what's your take on this news?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm not sure. You know, investor calls are often dry and just to the point, and maybe it did underperform. And I do think Activision is looking to, you know, what is the next Fortnite? What is that next huge monetization thing? And Black Ops is doing so well for them, and that is following a trend. Like you mentioned, it's really performing really well. And then at BlizzCon, I don't want to, you know, I'm talking about the controversy, but mobile is huge, right? So Blizzard, and they had said that all of their IPs are going to be on mobile, and they have, you know, people internal important at the studio working on, you know, seeing, exploring that avenue for all of their major franchises. And they're looking for ways where the gaming landscape is changing, and what is it going to be to drive revenue for them? And while Destiny was this ambitious 10-year cycle game back when Destiny 1 was an actor, you think even before that, when Bungie was first acquired by Activision, or they signed into this partnership, you know, how much has the gaming landscape changed just from that announcement now to the first DLC pack or large expansion of Destiny 2, where you're seeing things that are very different in terms of how things are monetized, and, you know, what Overwatch did and Fortnite and PUBG adding the Battle Pass kind of loop, gameplay loop. Now, Call of Duty Black Ops 4 adding it, Rocket League adding it with the Rocket Pass, how much money FIFA is still making with its gacha card packs and things like that. And so I could see Activision looking at Destiny and thinking, like, how do we change this franchise to be something that falls in line with where monetization in games for these big perpetual games seems to be going? And I think in that respect, it makes sense, even if that seems like a game I wouldn't be interested in. Like, that seems scary to me personally. But I think objectively, from a business argument, that seems to make sense. And whether or not it underperformed, I could see it underperforming as it's this thing that was an expansion, and their messaging about how to get it wasn't exactly clear. Like, if you bought Forsaken, you'd also still need to have these other two expansions. And to get the whole thing, it was $80. Well, here's a $60 version. Like, it wasn't as clean and neat as I think Forsaken King was when it came out. And it's, you know, aside from Black Ops 4 maybe taking some of its own players, just there were a lot of great games that came out when a perceived expansion came out. So do you want to get an expansion for this game that you've maybe moved on from? Or do you want to jump in new at this expansion that's maybe a little unclear about how you jump into it? Or do you want to play God of War, Spider-Man, Black Ops 4, which is this new thing, Forza, Sea of Thieves, which got a huge patch and is in Game Pass? There was so much out there that I think it was difficult territory for Forsaken to make large waves in, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you make great points there. It's interesting. It's interesting. I wonder if we'll see Destiny 2 continue to evolve, or if they will focus on what, you know, we heard the rumor of a Destiny 3 kind of spinning up. I wonder if they maybe move on that way. Interesting, interesting stuff. The exact quote is, this is from the COO, Cody Johnson. While Forsaken is a high quality expansion with strong engagement and new modes of play, it did not achieve our commercial expectations. Interesting. All right, well, let's move on. I do have to thank our first sponsor, which is Brooklinen. Oh my goodness. I get very little sleep these days, but thank goodness I have Brooklinen in my bed, because the very little sleep that I get at least is nestled between a very, very comfortable, luxurious Brooklinen sheets. I'm serious. I love my Brooklinen sheets. They're the nicest sheets I've ever owned in my life. And I actually didn't know how much difference great sheets can make to your sleep, but it is, my goodness, it's nice to have really luxurious, comfortable sheets to slide in between when you go to sleep. And this company, they know what they're doing. Brooklinen sheets were named the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. They have rave reviews from Business Insider. They basically decided to create super high quality sheets, but not make them super high expensive, because like a lot of these online companies, they can cut out the middleman and just send it directly to you over the internet, and they can reduce costs. So these are luxury sheets without the luxury markup. And you can see that by looking at their website. Most bedding is marked up as much as 300%. But when they take out the middleman and keep things personal, just between the customer and Brooklinen, it becomes possible to get the stuff that you would normally pay an arm and a leg for at a much more reasonable price. These look really nice. My wife actually helped Me pick out some really nice, who am I kidding? She picked them because I have no taste, but she picked some really nice gray and white striped ones. They have a lot of different colors and varieties. Check these out. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. And you should try them out because Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for listeners of DLC. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code DLC at Brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so sure you'll love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. That's amazing. That's amazing. Lifetime warranty, 60-night satisfaction guarantee. And the only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. That's B-R-O-O-K-L-I-N-E-N.com. Promo code DLC. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Time to talk about the games we have been playing. There are many, but Kate, you have one that I have heard so many wonderful things about, and I have been so curious about it. Seeing screenshots certainly doesn't entice me very much, but I hear this game is really worth overlooking the sort of drab presentation. Return of the Obra Dinn. Tell me about it.
That's right. I'm a sucker for murder mystery games, and very rarely, I think, are they done well, or to my satisfaction. And Return of the Obra Dinn is, I guess, everything I didn't know I was looking for. And it's actually kind of terrible because now I can't find anything else like it. I want to play it again, but it being a murder mystery, I can't. And so someone did advise me that the best thing to do was take some brain-altering substances so that I would actually forget what happened and I could play it again. But I'm not sure if it's worth that. So basically, you mentioned screenshots. It is a weird looking game. It's done in a sort of monochrome. It's a dark colored background, with usually white or another light color on top of it to represent the goings on the ship, the Obra Dinn, that has just floated back into port after, I think, 5 years of being missing. And everything is dithered, which means it is causing a lot of people some really difficult nausea issues, I hear. I was fine, but I don't get seasick or travel sick, so I'm very lucky. But that is something to maybe watch out for. You can fiddle with the settings, and hopefully that'll fix it. But the ship floats into port 5 years after disappearing off the coast of Africa, and everyone on board is dead. So 60-something crew members, passengers, royalty, all dead, and you have to piece together what happened using a magical pocket watch.
I played a game with a magical pocket watch this week as well. So what is it about this game that makes it so special? Is it just the writing? Is it the writing of the mystery, or is there something more?
It's a combination of so many things. It's made by Lucas Pope, who made Papers, Please, which is a game when the first time I played it, I played till 4 a.m. And that's something. I like playing video games for long stretches of time, and I don't usually stay up till 4 a.m. I was unemployed at the time. Maybe that was a factor.
you started playing at 3 a.m.?
maybe. So it's him making it, and the whole two-color thing is one of the methods he uses to kind of lighten the workload on himself. There's no animation, or like very, very, very little animation, because it's told through sort of still scenes. That's how the Magic Pocket Watch works. And so you're sort of walking around this still scene because you could move, but you're sort of seeing the moment of someone else's death and trying to figure out from clues you can barely see who died, how did they die, who killed them, and also getting clues from what's happening in the background. And it tells you a few things at the start, you know, like how to identify people, how to check things. Your fates are validated three fates at a time, so it kind of stops you doing too much guesswork. And then you figure out other things like how to find clues. There's one clue that's based on looking on someone's hand. There's one clue that's based on looking at the color of someone's stockings, it gets very, very difficult and very, very clever. And I also want to make a mention of the music, which I forget who did. I don't think it was Lucas Pope who did the music, but I could be wrong. I should have checked that. It's just very good. It's sparse, but very tense. And there are these certain sort of musical cues that you just, they shouldn't send shivers down your back. It's just like a little bit of strings, but it's incredible. It's so good.
People keep talking about it as a game of the year contender, and I'm so intrigued. But I have to admit, I am superficial and shallow enough to have the visuals be a big turnoff. But you're saying it's worth that, and it sounds like you're actually saying that the visuals enhance the experience.
I think so, because it makes it a little harder to tell what's going on. If you could see things like colors and faces in better fidelity, it wouldn't be so much of a mystery. I think that actually plays a big role. I would recommend, if you are going to play it, I played it for a few hours on my own, and then I completed it with my partner, and it was so much better for that, because he would notice things that I didn't. It kind of felt like we were sort of a Sherlock and Watson team, except we were both Sherlock. and it was, I don't want to be like, it made our relationship stronger, but like, what if it did?
I mean, that's amazing. I love that. I've definitely had that experience before. You know, you love sitting around and where one person's just in control, but everybody is participating. I think that sounds like a fantastic way to play this game.
Exactly. Yes. I think someday I want to make a list of single player games that are secretly two or more player games, because that one's definitely one of them. It would make a good party game with the right people, even.
Yeah. We used to do that in college all the time. We'd play Resident Evil or even Zelda like that, where if you were in control of the game, it meant really very little as far as deciding what to do next. Everybody would chime in and it would be this communal experience. That's one of my favorite way to play anything, really.
Yeah. I mean, I've played Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time a few times. And I guess I got the same feeling from Return of the Obra Dinn, where it's kind of like everybody's working together for the same purpose. And that's quite nice.
Yeah, wow, it sounds like a really, really interesting game. Let's talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, because you said you've been pouring hours into that game. So have I. I made a conscious decision to abandon Red Dead 2 and just go back to AC Odyssey because I loved it so much. And I was like, I just want to play that game. You are loving it, I take it?
Yes, it is satisfying. It's the equivalent of video game pizza. You know, it's not it's not like the best sushi you're gonna have in your life, but it's a very satisfying sort of meal that you can you can sit down and have anytime, and you can
it's sort
eat
of a
of it.
It feels sort of like an all you can eat buffet. There's a lot of it and it's frequently good, but it just keeps coming. They just keep bringing more courses, don't they?
Yes. I have played a surprising amount of Assassin's Creed games, having not really been into it at the start. And I do really like them. And I do also think that the last three or four games now have been the same with some changed up elements. It's fun to snipe people with a bow and arrow and to jump onto them and stab them in the neck. It's fun to run around ancient Greece. And I actually did ancient Greek and Latin for my degree. So I'm getting extra out of it. I'm like, oh my God, it's Socrates. Ah! but it does. I don't understand when people sort of review an Assassin's Creed game and go, wow, it's game changing. It's so innovative. I'm like, nah. It's a good Assassin's Creed game, you know? They've got a formula, and it works, and they do it, and it's fine. I'm fine with that. Just don't pretend it's new.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've refined this particular formula into one that I really enjoy, and it just kind of scratches all of the things I want from an open-world game. It just, it honors my ability to have agency. It rewards my curiosity. It always provides fun things. It's constantly giving me new bits and bobs to put on my character, which I enjoy. the world is fascinating and cool. I mean, the other night I like dove down into a volcano, which,
oh, I've done that bit.
So
yeah.
Cool. So fun.
I had to run away again.
Yeah. I mean, even the ship combat I find to be fun. Just every part of it in isolation is kind of fun, and adding up into this massive world that is just staggeringly huge. It's amazing to me there are that number of encampments and things to see and do. And yeah, a lot of them can be reduced to, you know, kill a few people here, loot the treasures there. But somebody had to make sure there were effective stealth positions in every one of those locations. And they all are laid out in really smart ways where you can kind of tactfully take down things and never being detected. And all of that is super satisfying. And I find it, you know, we've had a previous guest call it kind of cookie cutter. If so, I like cookies. I really dig cookies.
Yeah.
So keep cutting
That's
them
what
as
I mean
far as I'm concerned.
About the pizza. It's like, I like pizza.
Yeah, right.
But it is yeah. Pizza. It's always pizza.
Fair enough. Also, you noted here that you are replaying Sorcery.
I am, for a reason that I forget. Probably work. I think someone was looking for similar games to what they were trying to make. And I said Sorcery. And then my brain went, hey, yeah, that was a good game. So I downloaded all four of them because I don't think I ever made it to the fourth one. And I'm playing through. And it's just so good. It's just smart and friendly. Is that an odd word to use for a video game?
I think it's a delightful word to use for a video
game. Yeah. And I mean, it just has some very clever ways of making a choose your own adventure into a game that's satisfying without feeling like you're just turning pages, you know? If you get to the end of something and you haven't got the whole puzzle figured out, it'll come up with some clever twist that means you can go back and maybe check it out a second time. And it doesn't make you feel bad for doing that. It makes you feel like, oh, maybe that was just part of the story. It's got some really good storytelling in it, which I think is probably all Steve Jackson's work because he's the one who wrote the books initially. And it's quite sparse in terms of like art. You've pretty much just got a map and every now and again, a drawing of a monster. But it's more about the story than it is about what you're looking at, I guess.
And are you playing these on mobile on your phone?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. On, iPhone or because they're available on everything and they're also on Steam, I think,
really?
Too, right?
I think the iOS platform or any mobile platform for me is the best one for Sorcery because it is, you can take it in bite-sized chunks. I'm comparing a lot of things to food today. I think I probably need to eat after this. it is, you know, you can sit down on the train, you can play it for 15 minutes and you can sort of feel good about that. It doesn't feel like you're cutting into something halfway through. All the quests are quite short, quite easy to sort of go in and out. So yeah, I don't know if I'd play it on Steam.
Again, that's Sorcery, which I think have been mispronouncing because it has an exclamation point at the end. So it should be Sorcery, something along those lines. And there's four of them at this point. Christian, what about you? What's on your playlist?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Dark Forest chocolate cake with fresh cream and a raspberry
drizzle. Well, you are in
drizzle.
Vegas, right?
Yeah, with like a mint leaf that you brush aside. Mm. And the presentation is just exquisite. And so I am in Vegas and I brought my Switch. And I have plenty of games I can't be playing on my Switch. I can still be trying to beat Mega Man 11, which Dr. Wily's castle is the worst. I hate it. Until I beat it, then I will love it and be like, this is the game of the year. But right now I hate it. But I keep going back to Diablo 3, a game that I have played the vanilla version of 6 years ago. And to keep the food metaphors rolling, it is comfort food. It plays so well on Switch. It is so easily pick up and playable. It runs great in handheld mode. I'm playing as a necromancer, which I hadn't played before because the character wasn't available in the vanilla version. And I'm just wrecking shop with her. Like, you know, is it the sharpest 4K version? No, but do I have like a 10 skeleton army plus two other sorcerers that I spawn taking down 15 other demons on screen? And then I erupt their corpses to take out more demons that spawn? Yeah. And is it running pretty dang smoothly? Yes. Is it a six-year-old game? Yeah, sure. But it plays so well on Switch in that the way that they do their little, you know, dopamine bursts of you getting what feels like meaningful loot is paced so perfectly. Again, I mean, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir to everyone that's played it, but in the event that you haven't or you haven't played it in a while, I know, Jeff, you've been playing it, but I think Diablo 3 on Switch is such a great fit for, like, traveling, just playing on the couch, playing at work for 10-minute break instead of, you know, flipping through Us Weekly or whatever. I find it scratches all of those itches when I just want to sit down and do something. 9 times out of 10 this past week, it's been Diablo.
Yeah, what that game does so well is makes you feel OP all the time. Every new thing you're able to do, it's like, they're letting me do this now? Yeah. I can do that? That just feels like the
skeletons following me. Yeah. Nothing can stop me.
Yeah, the game must be broken because I should not be able to do this. And then, of course, you know, you continue to ramp up the challenge and then you get the new crazy thing. You're like, whoa, now they explode? I can do that now? It's really wonderful game design from that perspective of just making you feel like you're always overpowered. And yeah, you know, we talk about the Xbox One getting mouse and keyboard. This feels like one of those rare games that began its life as a click, click, click game. But man, does it feel really good not click, click, clicking all the time to play Diablo. I mean, maybe that's blasphemous. I certainly have clicked my way through lots of Diablo games. But having that direct control over the character and moving around and having dive rolls and stuff. I know anybody that's played them on PlayStation 4 or Xbox, because Diablo 3 has been available for those for a long time, understands, but you're right. Taking it on the go, having it with you all the time, it's pretty cool. Do we wish it had some new content? Yes, I do. Other than, I guess, you know, Ganondorf's armor. That doesn't really count to me as new content. But I wish it had a new expansion or a new something. It would be fun. But it's a pretty great game that I've dumped many, many hours into. And if it was on anything other than Switch, I kind of wouldn't bother because I wouldn't take the time to play it when I could be playing something else. But because Switch can be with me when I can't be playing other things, I will. So they got me again.
I'll extend your blasphemy and take it the farthest. You can direct all feedback to jeffiswrong@gmail.com for any of this.
yeah, that doesn't exist, by the way. DLC feedback@gmail.com. Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it on the chin.
I'll see it. I'll take it. I think this is the best version of this game. This is this game's most realized, purified version. Is it the sharpest? No. Does it have the best control? No. I mean, there are a few times when you're doing a ranged attack, you're not as precise as mouse and keyboard, but everything about it being put all into this package that you can play anywhere and everywhere, to me, this is the perfected version of this six-year-old game is the Switch version. So send all hate mail to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I realize I'm wrong, but to me, this is that game perfected.
Well, speaking of mail and Diablo, I should mention that we got a lot of feedback about our discussion about Diablo Immortal last week, and I really appreciate the comments. Everybody was really thoughtful and interesting, and even people that vehemently disagreed with me, and there were many that had problems with my characterization of the backlash. I appreciated the thoughtful commentary and the explanation. People said they laid out why they were upset about it. A lot of people did agree with me, which I appreciated as well. So thanks for all of the feedback. You can always send emails to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We appreciate them. So thanks for being an awesome community that can have a grown-up discussion about things. It means a lot. All right, let's move on. Most of what I played this week lives in the VR category, so we'll move on to that. I do want to thank our second sponsor, which is Blue Apron. Talk about something that is convenient, something that makes your life better, something that's the best version of something, the best version of cooking for me. Whew, Blue Apron. I'm not joking. It has changed my life. It has changed my life. What Blue Apron does is they send you farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door in a box once a week. These recipes, I think, are restaurant quality. They are so good. But I make them myself, and it has changed my life. I have become somebody that enjoys cooking. I look forward to it. I get excited when the new Blue Apron comes. I load up the app on my phone, and I pick out the recipes for the next few weeks coming up. I get so excited about that because you can choose from a bunch of different recipes that they offer. They have all kinds of different food options. They have, you know, they have vegetarian recipes. It is delightful when they arrive. It's delightful when I can cook for my family. I feel like I'm able to provide for my wife and kids, do something useful, and know that they're eating really well, delicious food prepared by me. I know exactly what's going into it. We're eating better. Portions are more reasonable. And this isn't something you need to invest tons of time in. Some of the meals cook in as little as 20 minutes. They give you exactly the portion that you need of the ingredients, so you don't have a bunch of waste at the end, so you feel better about that. You're not wasting a bunch of food either. You don't have to worry about figuring out what to buy. You don't have to worry about going to the grocery store as often. It's improved my life immeasurably, and I love it. It's delicious. We just had – last night I cooked a shrimp meal. I should have brought the card. Usually I bring the card in and read it, but – It was so good. Everything they have. And if you want to check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free, we're going to hook you up. BlueApron.com/DLC. Check out the menu. Just see if it looks good. I'm telling you, I eat much more variety, much better stuff because Blue Apron is in my life. That's BlueApron.com/DLC to get your first three meals free. Why not? Check it out. Try it. See if you like it. Blue Apron. A better way to cook. Well, I have a lot of VR to talk about. I'm very excited. But having Kate here, I'm even more excited because you've actually worked on a game that was released on the PlayStation VR platform. Nog, right?
I should say I didn't work on that.
Oh, you didn't? I'm sorry.
I work at the company who worked on that, but I joined afterwards. I mean, they've been working on it behind me, like literally next to me where I sit in the office. So maybe they'll thank me in the credits. Well, for snacks, I guess.
I apologize for my assumption there. But
no, it's all right. It's all right.
Nog is a really, I think, clever and delightful VR experience. It's certainly one you can play out of VR if you so choose as well, but I've only played it exclusively in VR. It's a little puzzle game where you have this kind of mystery box and you can rotate it all these different directions and you're fiddling with knobs and levers to open contraptions and containers and find things inside other things. It's really great. I was going to give you a bunch of kudos because I thought you were, but I still like the game.
Yeah. I mean, fun fact, before I joined co-op and actually before I moved to Montreal, I reviewed Nog on mobile and I gave it 5 out of 5. And that is not why they hired me. That sounds very like dodgy, but no, just a coincidence. I did really like the game. And so when I came here and they were like, work with us, I was like, actually, seriously, you want me to? Okay, sure. And now I'm there messing up all their games.
I don't know if you're able to tell me anything, but are they still working on VR as a platform? Is that something that's part of the company's goals?
I think all of our projects are secret right now, but I want to say stay tuned, but then I feel like I'm making promises that I shouldn't.
Well, I'll stay tuned anyway. Yeah, fair enough. You also wrote down here a creepy sex game.
Yeah.
I'm very curious.
We don't have to talk about it if it's too much for this family-friendly podcast.
Well, we can talk about it or not. It's up to you. But, I'm curious what this is.
Okay, so it is a game called VR Kanojo. People who know my work might know that I write about sexy games for Kotaku.com. And this was one of them. I don't have a VR headset. So embarrassingly, I played this at a friend's house. And it's sort of a virtual girlfriend game. And she sort of, she makes you do things like she drops a pencil and you pick it up. And she's like, help me with my homework.
Just like real girlfriends, always dropping pencils.
Yep. And then, you can dress her up or dress her down. There's all sorts of options. And
this sounds terrible.
It's isn't it? It's not terrible. It's very well made. VR sexy stuff has a long way to go because obviously the player can't move and that's not very sexy. but it's interesting. It is very interesting. One of the weird things is physics. I'm sure you can imagine. I'm not going to detail it, but I'm sure you can imagine how physics might be weird in a game about a virtual girlfriend who sometimes takes her clothes off.
Fair.
but it is a Japanese game, so it is censored, which is interesting for a game that is about taking your clothes off sometimes. It's I'd say it's worth checking out because, as I've mentioned a few times, it's well made.
Okay.
And if you're into that kind of thing, then it might be the game for you.
What is the title again?
It's called VR Kanojo.
Kanojo.
So Kanojo. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
I finished Astrobot's Rescue Mission this week, and I think it is absolutely sublime. I love that game with my whole heart. It is, it's incredible. It ramps up so beautifully. I raved about it when I first started it the week it came out and talked about how every level seems like this new wonderful idea that's unveiled to you. And I get so giddy each opening up each new level and each new world. There are only 5 worlds, which is not super short, but fairly short. And it leaves me wanting more. But man, that 5th world, it's like they decided, oh, okay, you've got to the 5th world. We're going to challenge you now. We're going to make a pretty challenging set of levels in the 5th world that actually, you know, make you have to be a pretty darn good platformer. And it's so fun. It is so fun. It doesn't feel punishing. It does that thing that I think is essential with games like this, where when you die, you are immediately back. There's no loading. There's no waiting around. Like, oh, I feel punishing yourself for missing that jump or whatever. You're just immediately back at the last checkpoint. Which is wonderful. And the last few levels are diabolical and fun. The last 2 bosses in the game are some of the most fun platforming boss fights I've ever experienced. The second to last boss is basically Jaws, and you defeat him the way you defeat, you know, they defeated Jaws in the movie, but done with a cartoony, you know, panache that this game brings to the table. It's awesome. And then the last boss is like you're almost fighting yourself, and it kind of is taking points from everything you've done in the game up to that point and throwing it back at you. It's so clever. It's so fun. The VR effects are absolutely additive and make the game, I think, unlike anything you've ever played, where it's all around you and above you and behind you, and you have to, you know, lean in and look around a corner to discover the secrets. It's one of the best games of the year for sure. I think one of my favorite platformers ever. I said this before. I think that if Nintendo had made this game, everybody would be talking about it for game of the year. It's that good. It just is an IP that no one pays much attention to on a platform that people underestimate, and therefore it doesn't get the attention that it deserves. But everybody should play Astrobot's Rescue Mission. It is that good. It's incredible. I also got a chance to play another PSVR, I think exclusive. This is one from Software, that you know them from the Dark Souls series and other Souls games. This could not be farther from that, and it is actually a game I don't love. It's called Deracine. I'm certainly mispronouncing that because it has accent marks over everything. It is very slow, lugubrious, kind of emo game. It's basically a narrative that you are uncovering by, again, using a magic pocket watch and manipulating time. You are a fairy and you are floating about, well, not floating, you are moving point to point, VR style, from these glowy points that you can move through the environment, and kind of observing things and picking up stuff and manipulating it. And then finding important items that are important to people, which cues memories that you get to observe and clues you in on their storylines. And you kind of have to piece things together and look around and find out what has happened in this kind of 18th century mansion. And I appreciate it. I think it's lovely. It's very slow paced. It's, like I said, very emo. The story is fine. It's just not a game that captured me. I like the fact that games like this can exist in VR, and because what you're doing in VR is slow and measured and observational, it really works. But I don't know. This game just didn't really grab me, and I didn't love it. So very different thing from Software. It kind of has the flavor of something like people like someone delivered a PlayStation VR headset to the developers, and they were like, "This is crazy. Let's just make something." And then they made this. You know, it's like a first try. It feels like a first effort. Like, whoa, what would be an interesting thing to do in VR? Well, let's do that. But I hope that they stick with it and have something more interesting on the platform, because it certainly seems like it comes from a place of love. And I would love to see the From Software developers do something even more interesting with VR. But Deracine, if that's how you pronounce it, certainly not one of my favorites on PSVR. But I will say, this is something I've been tweeting about a lot. We're moving up on the holiday season here, and people are going to have all of their big Black Friday deals. I know that PlayStation VR is being heavily discounted for Black Friday. I think there's a $200 bundle with Moss and Astrobot Rescue Mission. Jump on it, man. I think that PlayStation VR is in such a good place this holiday season, with Tetris Effect coming out last week, Borderlands VR coming out soon, Astrobots and Moss and Superhot and all the games that have come out in the last 2 years. It is a phenomenal platform with a really strong holiday lineup. So if you've been curious about VR, I know one of the biggest questions that I get from people is, do I need the PlayStation Pro? You do not. The PlayStation Pro adds a little, but it's very, very negligible, the difference. It is very playable on a base PlayStation 4. And if you're curious about VR, I would suggest giving it a shot. Moss and Astrobot's Rescue Mission are worth the price of admission alone. And there are many, many other games that are excellent in that stable as well. So I'm bullish, as usual, bullish on VR, but also very bullish on PlayStation VR this holiday season, because I think they have just knocked it out of the park with these exclusives. Man, so many great games. All right. Oh, I also played Evasion. I'll save that to another time. We can talk about that later. Let's talk. Kate is a tabletop gamer, so let's do a little bit of tabletop time. I was so delighted to hear that you not only play D&D regularly, but also have some other tabletop games to mention. Let's start with D&D, though. What is your experience playing that? Are you playing 5th edition?
Yeah, we are currently. I've been playing D&D for a few years, but never to completion. You know, you always end up playing maybe 5 games, and then life gets in the way.
yes.
And I'm hoping this always. One will be different. It's with a bunch of friends who live in Montreal. We all get together, usually at my house, because it's the one that's the warmest. it is a big problem in Montreal, obviously.
It's D&D as means of survival.
Yep. I think my only problem is I usually play a character who is a caricature of me, as I think a lot of people do. So a sort of British-y, kind of overexcitable historian type. and this time I decided to go in the opposite direction, because it's role-playing. You're supposed to try and be something new. So I'm playing a cleric. I guess that's the opposite of me. I'd probably be a bard in D&D.
I love it.
So I've gone for cleric. And I haven't been able to connect with my character in any big way yet. So we'll see.
Christian, what would your class be if you had to pick a class that you felt was representative of who you really are? I mean, I guess bard is pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, bard is pretty good. The hard part is like who I really am, or like, you know, who I really am. You know, I'm a barbarian. I'm a warrior. And it's like, you know, yeah, I ran cross country and mid distance and track. Like, that's, you know, that's not like buff warrior. That's like internal fortitude.
You frequently take your shirt off, though. You know, you're a barbarian at heart.
Yeah. Show up to the office and I'm like, what is it, 10:30? Shirts off.
It's barbarian life. Come on, guy. Everybody do it. Let's do it.
I mean, for real. And I know, like, traditional D&D doesn't allow this, but in some of the expanded worlds, like, I'm the character at the bar that is just like, be quiet, you know.
You're the NPC.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, why did we come here? The travelers always come here. Like, I'm that. That's me.
That's hilarious.
I'm maybe a good quest giver, where it's like, you know, something happened and I'm trying to rat out what's happening in the dungeon. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the narc. Yeah. You know, I'm never the hero in these games.
Your adventurers into the tavern. There's a quiet stranger in the corner playing a handheld video game system in the dark. What's he doing? Yeah. I think, I mean, this sounds maybe self-aggrandizing more than I intend it to be, but I have always gravitated toward paladin. Because maybe I'm a little self-righteous. I'm not religious at all, but I am, I like to think that I have, an aura around me that lends some light to the world. I like to try to, at least that's the fantasy of myself that I would like. I like to project light and positivity and maybe, carry a shield and protect those in need. That's always been the class in really, even in video games that I've tried to, that I've always gravitated toward, but. Interesting mental exercise there.
I mean, I think your character would be like, you know, like the guy recounting what happened afterward, right? Like, you'd be telling the story. You'd be the lead in of what happened. Like, there was a lore in the ground of great heroes and warriors, and then other people go and do it.
Well, that's the problem. All three of us are bards. Right, that's the problem. Exactly. It's a party of bards. It's very, very. None of us could take damage. We're all our loots constantly get broken. It's not good.
Or maybe you could be like the chef, you know, like
chef,
big Italian family cooking things up, you know, keeping everybody fortified. I'd come in and, you know, we'd find a turkey in a garbage can that we'd get to eat as we entered the dungeon.
I cast Blue Apron on the group.
I like that.
All right, Kate, what else you got? You got, you did one of the escape rooms in a box, I noticed.
I did. Now, I've never done an escape room in real life, which is a bit of a shame because it's one of my favorite genres of game, video game. So I got the chance to play a card game. I invited my friend over. He's also our DM, so I know that he enjoys the board games. And he brought a small selection of the ones that would fit in his bag, which included this Fate of London game. And I lived in London for 3 years. I'd love to know what the Fate of London is. Fate of London is getting a bomb threat. But specifically, the bomb makes everyone forget things. And it wasn't really... Mm. I mean, I think the plot is that they wanted to make politicians and the queen forget everything so they could steal something. It wasn't a particularly smart plot, let's say, but the puzzles were quite good. Maybe anyone familiar with puzzles and Escape the Room games will know that sometimes you'll look at the solution and you'll be like, no, that's not a solution. That's not a puzzle, that's a riddle. You're trying to catch me out here. You know, it's like, oh, how do you open this thing? And it's got all these bolts and chains around it. And it turns out that it's like set it on fire or something. Yeah. So, you know, there are a couple of moments of that. But otherwise, it was very good.
So this is one of the Deckscape games. There are a number of these lines of Escape the Room. There's like Exit and Escape the Room, and this one's Deckscape. I have not played any of the Deckscape ones, but it is, I think, the leanest as far as footprint of any of these games. And then you kind of were mentioning that about, you know, your friend having it in his bag. It really is just a deck of cards, and it's like, you know, it says don't look at any of these cards, just do them in order. And so in that sense, I think it's pretty cool because you can really bring it anywhere. And then you're playing this cool puzzle game, but you thought you were a little underwhelmed by the puzzles themselves.
Yeah, and also because of the play the cards in order thing, you can only play it once. Like, I know the solutions now. I don't know what we're supposed to do about that.
Well, no, all of these kinds of things are basically disposable. Mm-hmm. They're one-time play experiences, but there's enough of them that you can keep doing them over and over. You know, there's a bunch, but yeah, that's true. You better have a team that wants to play it, because once you're halfway through and they're like, "Eh, we quit," you're like, "No, I'll never be able to do this again."
Yeah.
But I've enjoyed the process. It's kind of funny. You know, some of these actual escape rooms are pretty expensive, and you know, you get $20 for a deck of cards that you know you can all play gives a similar experience. It's pretty cool. But you also played Codenames, which is a game I love. Codenames Duet is a relatively new spin on that. Tell me about your experience with Codenames.
I love Codenames. I have played probably most iterations of Codenames. I've played the regular kind, the duet kind, which is the two-player kind, and Codenames Pictures. Mm-hmm. I was expecting, because Codenames is very much a group game, that Codenames Duet would have all these complicated rules to make sure that you could play a two-player. But actually, it doesn't. It's got only minor modifications, really, which means you can actually buy Codenames Duet and, as far as I know, play it with multiple people, like regular Codenames style, which I think is quite nice. It's basically two games in one. Hmm. It's good. You know, if you've got a partner or a friend who you like playing games with, but you hate all other humans, it makes quite a nice game to play, because you know there aren't a lot of good two-player cooperative games that have satisfying endings. I think that's one of the main problems with cooperative board games, is you get to the end and you're like, oh, we won. Okay. Yeah,
it's less we won, it's more we didn't lose.
Basically. Yeah. With Codenames Duet, the way it works is that you both have a separate list of words. If you're familiar with Codenames, you're usually red blue team. The red team has ten words that you have to guess, and the other team has the same, and it's whoever gets that many first. With Codenames Duet, you are working from the same board of words, but you have different lists, and so sometimes I'm sorry if this is wrong, it's been a few weeks since I played it, but sometimes you'll have a word, but it's the assassin, which is the the eight ball ultimate lose. I'm not explaining this.
I think if I may, I think it's a little bit like Taboo, where basically it's get them to guess this word without saying these words, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you've got a bunch of words on the table, and if you have, for example, like tree and bear, you might say forest, but you can't say tree or bear. And with Codenames Duet, you're trying to get all the words, but you're also trying to sort of get them to get your words. It's an interesting collaborative effort that I actually think is very pleasant to play.
I really enjoy Codenames. It's one of those games that I recommend to everybody. It's like one of those games that should be a staple of anybody's board game collection, because you can bring it out for any group, and almost always people are like, "Oh, let's play that again. I think I understand it now." And honestly, the question I get more than any other question about board games is, is there a game I can just play with two players? My wife and I want to try something, or my boyfriend and I want to try something. It's always that question. So it's cool that they made this for a two-player version. I haven't had a chance to try it yet myself, so I'm intrigued. That's cool.
I think they're also making a Codenames Harry Potter, which I don't understand. Why?
Yeah, they made a Marvel one, and you know, it's this kind of thing where it's like, well, we got this hit, let's squeeze every last dollar out of it by getting IP, you know, whatever. I haven't tried the Marvel one. I'm a little worried about it, to be honest. All right, that's so much fun. Let's wrap the show up. We do have our parting gift coming up, so stick around for that. But Kate Gray, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, it's been delightful. Can you tell people where they can keep up with you and your work online?
Of course. I think the best place to find me is Twitter. I am at @HowNotToDraw. I pretty much put everything on there. I'm a little less on it recently because I tried to delete it. It's not going very well, so you will still see me on there. And you can also find my work mostly at the moment on Kotaku.com, but also all over the internet.
Well, I am excited to be staying tuned for co-op to see what next games emerge from that. That'll be fun. Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
Yeah, Twitter's the best way to get in touch. It is at Spicer. Yeah, that's probably pretty good. Instagram, Christian_Spicer. You can see the one bad picture I took of when I was at Blink in Vegas. Because, you know, I'm living life, not taking photos of it. And
yeah, prove it. Prove your living life. Pics or it didn't happen, buddy.
Look at all these pictures I have of me not taking pictures. So what I've done is I've hired a crew of professional photographers.
Well done.
To follow me around, and I'm never taking the pictures myself, but I'm always perfectly posed. So
I just saw online there was somebody posted a picture of a Burning Man, and all these people were like just standing there at Burning Man looking at the man burning, and they were like, look at all these people just living life, not with a camera in their hand. And I was like, yeah, but the camera is clearly behind them, and there's probably dozens of people behind them with cameras. Anyway,
that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. So once I get them back from the person running Photoshop on them to make sure I look good, I'll post a whole bunch of candids.
There you go. You know,
just like me in my natural environment, untouched.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But what do you got going on this week? Anything else?
I'm not focused. I don't know. No, nothing.
All right, fair enough.
Helping people recover from the wildfires and donating to those causes. And that's what other people, I would love to see other people doing that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm attempting to prevent my kids from being poisoned by the air and hoping that my house does not burn down because it's literally in eyesight. I can see flames from my house. So that's fun. But I also do the /Filmcast, and we're going to be talking about Overlord this week. So you should check that out over at /Filmcast.com. It'll be a fun discussion, I'm sure. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And if you have any comments about this show, want to talk to us or suggest anything, or maybe even review a game yourself, we do have listener reviews. If there's a game we're not talking about enough and you'd like to send us a brief review, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love getting your feedback there. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gift. Hey, give us a suggestion. Kate, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I sure do. I have so many. I have one that I didn't even write down. I'm going to start with that one. I have been listening to funk. That sounds like something you'd say in like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Like, I'm sorry, everyone, I've been listening to funk. Specifically this one band called Wolfpack or Wolfpack, however you want to say it. I don't know, so I'm going with both. They are a very lovely band who sort of get together and jam and make these lovely funky songs that are very summery, very cheerful. I'm making it sound terrible because no one likes music that's just cheerful, but trust me, it perks your spirits up. It's great.
That sounds amazing. It's Wolfpack spelled the way it normally would?
With a V and a U. Right. So like
Wolfpack. Got it. I'm looking that up immediately. I love funk. Prince is my favorite artist of all time. I love funk, and I can use some positivity right now. So yes, I'm into it.
What else you got? It's light funk. Yeah, it's good. Okay, so I've also been reading books. I've just discovered these things called books. They're amazing. I don't know if anyone's heard of them.
Big fan myself. I love them.
I mostly listen to audiobooks currently because reading books, who has time for that? Making yourself look at things for hours. But I have just finished a book called Circe, which is named after and about Circe, the witch who turns men into pigs. And it's a sort of feminist retelling of her myth that I found really interesting, both as a woman and as someone who studied classical literature and civilization at university. I really like feminist retellings of history, probably for obvious reasons, where it sort of recenters the woman as the main character. It's very good. It's very interesting. I liked it a lot. So read that.
Circe, is it spelled like, I mean, I imagine if you Google it, you'll come up with lots of Game of Thrones references.
Yes, it is spelled slightly differently to that. Thank goodness. So it's C-I-R-C-E, Cersei.
Gotcha. Great.
As I mentioned, I listen to audiobooks. I just finished one called The Bone Clocks, which is by David Mitchell, who wrote Cloud Atlas.
I love The Bone Clocks so much.
It's incredible. And I keep sort of Googling The Bone Clocks because I want to see people discussing it, but basically no one is. And I just, I don't know who to talk to about it because no one talks about books.
It's so good. And it's amazing. The last chapter it feels so possible and frightening.
Yeah, and it was a little depressing. Yeah. This was this week I was listening to it. So, you know, maybe a bit much right now. But the rest of the book is much more sort of buoyant-ish. I won't say too much about it because I went in knowing nothing about it, and I think that made it better, perhaps.
It's phenomenal. He's an amazing writer, and
he is.
I think Bone Clocks might be my favorite of his books. It's outstanding. I loved it. Yeah,
I'm going to read more of David Mitchell now because I liked it. And my last recommendation is Maniac on Netflix, which I'm sort of cautiously recommending to people because I'm almost finished with it and I have no idea what it's about still. It's sort of like it's attempting to tie up threads in a way that I'm like, okay, sure. I don't know what that is or what that means, but okay. It's a very visually interesting program, and it's got Emma Stone playing a non-comedy character, and I think, who's the other one? I forget.
Jonah Hill?
Yes, that's him. He's that guy that looks like most of the other guys. also playing a non-comedic character, which I think is quite interesting. And the set design, it's this sort of futuristic 70s Japanese technology-influenced thing. That's like it's like looking at a Star Trek set from back when it looked like that. Everything's sort of brown and orange and chunky. It's amazing. Definitely worth seeing.
I couldn't get through the first episode, but I think it's because I put it on and I was too tired and I was like, my brain can't handle this right now. It's very dense and like you said, you're not really sure what's going on at any given time. But
it's slow. The first couple of episodes, nothing happens, and you're like, why should I care? I think they could have shortened the intro quite a lot to get into the meat of it, which is the interesting visual stuff that happens. Yeah.
Cool. It's Maniac on Netflix, The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell, and Cersei, which I'm not sure who the author was. That did you mention that? I don't know.
It's Madeline Miller.
Madeline Miller.
Yeah.
Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
Yeah, two quickies. One's light, one is a little heavier. X-Men Red, which I believe it wraps up, just wrapped up or wrapping up soon. I'm behind, but it's a phenomenal X-Men comic book, Jean Grey-led team that started, I think, March of this year and is coming to a close soon. At least this arc is coming to a close soon. I believe the first three, maybe the first four are on Marvel Unlimited if you have that. You can find some trades of some of the early issues. X-Men Red is really, really enjoyable. It's a fun X-Men book and the kind of doing what X-Men does so well, and it's, you know, shine a mirror on our world as told through what the X-Men are enduring.
And the other one is that in the lineage of Spider-Man Blue and Daredevil Yellow and Hulk Gray and all those, like, is that next in that line?
You know, I don't think so, but I don't know. I've only read Daredevil Yellow of those. I think this is canon, and I think it's just kind of called that because Jean Grey is leading it. But I'm 100% ignorant as to that fact. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
And the other one is I'm starting this book. It messing my headspace, but I like it. Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. It's written by a New York Times author. And it's just kind of an ex, I think he no longer writes for the Times, but it's just kind of rethinking the idea of economics and society built in a way that it is built and type of thinking that might be possible or may need to be possible to change things in a large scale way. And I'm not necessarily agreeing with everything, but I think it's interesting to read things that challenge the status quo, and this book is certainly doing that. It's Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. I will butcher the author's name if I say it, and I apologize for doing that, but it is Anand Giriharandas, something like that. Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World, and it's complicated.
Yeah, I know you had thought so highly of it, you were going around offering to buy it for people just so they would read it. I'm very intrigued by it.
It's like the bone clocks. I need to talk about it with somebody. Be yeah, like, exactly. Can we do this? Can society do this? I need to have intellectual. I need to go to a parlor, right, and sit around and talk.
Yes, yes. So say we all. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This was sent to us by Damian Dolan. He says, "Back up your data." He said, "This is more of a PSA than a real parting gift, but after watching the California wildfires burn, cities flood, and whole states get flattened by storms in 2018, I feel this should be a staple of your to-do list. Cloud backup software has come a long way and it's very affordable. Not going to recommend one, but they all do basically the same thing, and there are a lot of choices. If you suffer one of these disasters, the last thing you need to be worried about is if your hard drive with all your kids' photos will be salvaged." He says, "Stay safe, Jeff, and everyone in harm's way. Remember, things can be replaced. People can't." Good advice. Good advice. I don't know why it is that we all put off backing up our data, but do it. Do it. I can take this to heart myself. I'm very good about photos. I always back those up with redundancy, but other things, you know, we don't let your data go away, because even if you don't have a natural disaster, chances are you're going to have a tiny disaster when a hard drive crashes or something bad happens. So good advice. Good advice. My parting gift is another series. This is on Netflix as well as a BBC series. I guess this is great to have you here, Kate. I don't know if you were familiar with it, but I guess it was a massive hit in the UK. It's called Bodyguard. And it stars the guy who played Robb Stark. And it is just 6 episodes, but my wife and I think watched them in 2 days. It's riveting. It's awesome that it's a show that starts at 11 and then like goes up from there. It is so good. It's sort of political intrigue and terrorism. It's what I wish 24 was. So much better than that show, in my opinion. And just great watch. Bodyguard is on Netflix now. You can watch it. Were you familiar with this one, Kate? Did you know about it?
I'm really bad at BBC drama. There's so many I've missed. So I've not heard of that one before, no.
I guess it was this huge hit in... I don't know, a year or so ago? I don't know. Anyway,
okay.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it and heartily recommend it. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Kate Gray and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with us as well live. We appreciate it. We had a bit of a funky recording time this week. Appreciate you guys hanging out and being there with us. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those cool bumpers. And thank you to you for downloading the show. It means a lot to us. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.